opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here, right now.
Yes, and you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here. It's the lip smacking, trash talking, good Philadelphia style on WWDB AM Talk 860 every Thursday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's prime time drive time for you folks out here in the East. And you can listen five ways, whichever works best for you. You can tune in to WWDB AM Talk 860. And if it went dark, you know what I'm talking about. If you're there, you could find us live on HD2 radio station 97.5, or you can listen to us anytime, anywhere by downloading the WWDB radio app, or you could go to WWDBAM.com and click the Listen Live button. And even better, you can call the listener or even talk to us at 888-329-3306. And I am your host, Marianne Castello, along with my other host, who I see is sitting there in the green room, so we're going to get him right on. He is a broadcast vet, born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the ring with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with SiriusXM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDBAM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show and the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. Hi, Mark.
I'm feeling good. I just had the cheesesteak, minus all the onions, so I'm feeling really good. I got a tag team partner on this show today to compensate, to go after Sal, Brett the producer, and everything. Ladders, tables, and chairs, Sal, tonight.
Well, we're going to bring Sal right in because I'm sure he's going to answer that. He is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware County, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all of that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series games and publish his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting. And here he is. Let's welcome our host, Sal Tartaglia. Hey, Sal.
Thanks, Mayor. Hi, Philly. Guess what? James Harden and the 76ers are undefeated.
Really?
That's right. Three games in, but it is what it is.
You're going to have a parade?
Well, not after three games. I'm just saying, though, they haven't lost. You know?
Well, Sal, he threw down a challenge for you, Mark, just before you came on.
Okay.
Okay, but before we get to that, before we bring out the bats and everything else that we're going to pound his car in when you win this, I want to know how we could fix it for him if we do this to him.
My friend JT Auto Body has gifted repair team that will have your car looking and running like new. Owner Joey Trainer has been servicing the Delaware County area for decades from his shop at 416 Primus Avenue in Fulcroft. And he'll have your car looking like new in no time with that showroom smell. Call them at 610-534-1643 and tell them Sal called you.
Well, I like showroom smells. That could be really good. I like the smell of cheesesteaks. Thank God you didn't eat the onions, Mark, because we have two great guests sitting right in our green room. So we're going to get right to it right now. Okay, guys?
All right.
I'm ready.
All right. He is a historian, an author, and freelance writer who earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in History and Political Science and a Master's of Arts degree in History at the University of Vermont and holds a PhD in U.S. History from Boston College. From 2011 to 2013, he was a graduate teaching fellow at Boston College and then became an instructor at the Community College of Vermont from 2013 to 2016. He is pulling triple duty right now. He joined SB Nation as the site editor and staff writer for Down the Drive, a site which covers the University of Cincinnati athletics, writing about college football and college basketball for over 6 years now. He is the author of A History of Professional Sports in Atlanta and serves as a state chair for the Vermont chapter for the Society of American Baseball Research, known as SABRE, for over 4 years now. And he's an instructor at Norwich University in Northfield, Vermont for over 3 years now. And in 2017 for SABRE, he was the co-editor of Overcoming Adversity, Baseball's Tony Conigliaro Award. He is an entrepreneur as a historian, author, and freelance writer. As a PhD historian, his areas of scholarly interest are U.S. cultural and intellectual history, sports history, and history of religion. As an author, he's represented by John Rudolph of Distel, Goderick, and Bouet, LLC, and authored his book in 2021 titled Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and Atlanta Remade Professional Sports, which is the first book to examine how Atlanta's civic leadership pushed through the massive undertaking and how, despite the late Hank Aaron's pursuit of Babe Ruth's home run record, drawing the major leagues to Atlanta did not necessarily ensure the on-field or box office success of these franchises. This book will change the way you look at the business and cultural impacts of sports. As a freelance writer, his work has appeared in Christianity Today, Publishers Weekly, Chesapeake Bay Magazine, American History, History Net, SB Nation, and many other fine venues. He's made many media appearances on various radio shows, including The Tom Abrams Show on ESPN 97.7 Tennessee Valley, Kale and Company on WKXL New Hampshire Talk Radio, The Paul Feinbaum Show on SEC Network and ESPN Radio, Dog Sports Live on SB Nation, The Scott Hamilton Show on ESPN Radio 98.9 FM Charleston, and the WKNY AM Drive Sports Show on WKNY 1490 AM Kingston, and countless others. Yes, he is a historian and a huge sports fan, but he has a bucket list item he needs to check off: the big game 5. Can it be done in Philly today? Why not? There's Mark, Sal, Marianne, that's me, and two guests and himself. So what is the big game 5, Philadelphia style? Why not? Let's welcome Clayton Truter to Liberty Bell Smack. Hey, Clayton.
Thanks so much for having me. What a pleasure. Yes, going to the Palestra is one of the things I would most want to do on my sports bucket list, definitely.
You know, Clayton, Mark Mancini here, and we are so blessed to have you in here. I've known you for quite a while, and, you know, just your expertise and knowledge across the board. I want to start out with the book, Loserville. It's a great book, you know, when you break down the Atlanta sports. Getting to know Tommy Glavine and Greg Maddux over the years and covering them when they came out to Los Angeles. You know, the Braves, I don't think, get a lot of respect. I know the 14 division titles and people look at the one World Series, but I don't think you're going to ever see a team reel off 14 straight division titles. I think that's success in itself. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. What John Schuerholz accomplished as the Braves general manager is a remarkable thing, just building such a consistent minor league system. Also making use of free agency, too. The Braves certainly did that quite well during the 90s as well. But building such a culture of success in their minor league organization made it possible to have this very unprecedented run. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon either. It just seems like there's too much competitive balance in place in the league now for that to happen anytime soon.
You know, when you look at the Braves now, the World Series champions, how different do you look at this team that won it last year compared to the team of Glavine, Maddux, and all those guys back in 95?
It completely blows my mind. You had a team that through August 1st was winning a game, losing a game. They were 500 for most of the season and then finally turned it on toward the end. It had a very different feel than the Braves championship in 95, or really that whole decade, where it felt like the Braves were always on the verge of winning a championship, a game away, a couple of games away. Well, they faltered this October to this particular team. It just seemed like it was going to happen. It was going to happen. Whereas this thing, it did happen without just this massive buildup in the same way. Certainly the Braves have been successful in recent years, but I don't think anybody looked at them really in the way they looked at the Braves almost dynasty of the 1990s. At least within the context of the National League, it was a dynasty. But in the sense of being one in terms of championships, it never really got to that point. We'll see with this modern iteration. I think the honeymoon of winning a championship is a little harder to deal with than a lot of people realize.
With respect to those Braves, Clayton, you know, those 14 division titles, and I was going to start somewhere else, but Mark forged the path for me. You know, just by the law of averages, any team you think would win more than one title, you know, and that run. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, they say, you know, pitching and defense wins championships, right? And, you know, everybody loves long ball during the regular season, but and they had pitching like no one else in 14 division titles. Of course, they all weren't there for all 14. But how, you know, your closeness to the team, is there any insight you can give as to what they felt? Like, was it, you know, yeah, you're in a World Series and it's a great feeling, but you just stumble all the time in the 90s anyway.
Well, I think for one thing, they never had a legitimate, consistent rival within the division. There was certainly the Phillies had their 93 season. The Expos looked like they may have been a long-term competitor. After 94, they end up having the fire sale there, essentially with the Expos, with Alou and Walker and all those great players they had disappearing. Yeah. I think in some ways the Braves got very lucky by what was happening elsewhere in the National League East in this time period to make that possible once there's the division format change. So I think a lot of it is a matter of luck on their part, and also creating your own luck by having such a strong pitching rotation, bullpen, finding a lot of guys who can hit throughout the National League as well.
I was pleased that they won last year because, you know, I'm a National League guy because of my, you know, my Phils, but unless the Mets are in the series, then I go to the American League. but other than that, I mean, the Braves finally showed through last year, and, you know, they're the only team to win a title in three different cities in our nation. Boston, Milwaukee, and then, of course, Atlanta twice. Of course, they also lost a World Series in all those cities also. Mm-hmm. But I'm just and by the way, the Rams are the only football team to do the same thing. But one thing, finally, you know, it seems like they should be regarded as royalty more because, you know, they have such a long history. And the 90s, you know, yeah, they were there a lot, you know, but most fans, unless you're from Atlanta, would look at that as failure. So I'm glad they finally got through because their record, you know, in the World Series, it's not bad. You know, I think they have four or five titles over the years. And, you know, I look at them as one of the elite teams. What are your thoughts?
I would probably put them just under what the Cardinals and Dodgers have
right.
achieved in the National
right.
League historically.
Right.
I think they'd be on that next threshold. I do think moving around changes the perception of things, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, Boston Braves, you know, spawn saying pray for rain. That really is a long time ago. I mean, the Milwaukee championships happened in a very particular era. It is quite something that team ends up leaving basically a half decade after being a championship contender. So I think splitting it up plays some role in that as well. I would also say I am totally a National League guy in an American League body. I grew up in New England as a Red Sox fan. I'm heartbroken about what's happened in the National League with the DH. To me, it was always fun to turn on the National League games and be able to watch that. To me, it added such an interesting strategic element. And I guess for me as an American League fan, there was an aspect of novelty to it. I mean, if I watched that every day, I can't really say how I'd feel. But I miss being able to just turn on any National League game and see a different product than what I experienced night in and night out in the American League.
You know, Clayton, I think Sid Breen picked up more speed down in Atlanta when he left Pittsburgh, and that's a story for another day. You could throw a comment on that because that was very painful for me to watch when Francisco Cabrera got that hit. Here came Sid Breen across the plate, and I thought we had that series and we were going to play Toronto, but Atlanta got to play Toronto. Any quick thought to that? And then I want to talk about why hockey hasn't succeeded in Atlanta.
Well, I'll quickly say, Sid Bream is the first person I ever saw hit a home run at a game. At Olympic Stadium as a little kid, Sid Bream hits the front home run against Montreal in like 91 or something like that. And so he's always had a firm place in my heart because of that. I loved watching those Pirates teams of that time period. I was like 10 years old at the time. I mean, I enjoyed those teams. It's sad to see the way they broke up and didn't end up getting to the World Series as it seemed like was quite a possibility in that time period. I always enjoyed watching Jim Leland as a manager, too.
Well, I have to tell you, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to our very special guest, Clayton Fudor, right here on Liberty Bell Smack. We are here every Thursday on WWDB AM Talk 860. And if you want to see our lovely shining faces, you could do so because we are on Facebook Live right on the Liberty Bell Smack page or on WWDB AM Talk 860. Go that to that page and join our conversation online. And I know that Sal, I'm feeling a little hungry during this show. I think Mark could be, possibly Sean and Clayton too. And tell me where we're going after this.
Well, aside from the food, do you like games?
I love games.
How about games that pay you?
I like that even better. You have my interest.
Well, because on Thursday nights from 7 to 11 p.m., there's bingo at the all-new Delco Cup, formerly the Stanley Cup Inn, located at 209 Baltimore Pike in Springfield. There are drink specials, food, and plenty of fun. So come on out. It'll be fun. That's the Delco Cup Inn.
Well, thank you very much. And we actually want to congratulate the Delco Cup because tonight is their premiere of being one of our official sponsors here right on Liberty Bell Smack. So I know that our special guests get to know that now we get to play bingo after this as well. So if you're just tuning in, like I said, you could call or chat with us too at 888-329-3306. Back to you, Mark.
You know, to finish up on the hockey in Atlanta, Clayton, I want to talk about guys that transfer, you know, really made an impact in sports. We know Jackie Robinson in baseball. We look at Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, who got us off the 11:30 p.m. Tape delays of the NBA championship days. And then we look at Wayne Gretzky, who came from Edmonton to the Kings. And now we have warm weather cities really doing wonders with that sport. Vegas, Seattle, San Jose, Arizona,
Tampa.
You know, when I look at Atlanta, and I look at Atlanta, and I say to myself, maybe Wayne Gretzky should have come down there for a press conference because you had the Atlanta Flames. I remember Jim Craig coming off the Olympics, and then they went by the wayside. Then Danny Heatley and the guys with the Thrashers. What is the deal with hockey in Atlanta? Why isn't it, you know, pulled through like it has in Tampa and Nashville and some of these Southwest cities?
I think the two NHL situations were a little different in Atlanta. The Flames actually in their early years did quite well. They were such a novel attraction. There wasn't even an ice rink in the state of Georgia when they got there. So for a lot of particularly upscale consumers, going to the Omni to see a hockey game was like nothing they'd ever seen before. In six of their eight seasons, they were above average in attendance. They made the postseason in six of their eight seasons in town, too. Their issue is really more ownership. Their owner, Tom Cousins, was a major real estate investor in Atlanta, had the Omni Coliseum, had a surrounding Omni International Complex, which was a mixed-use development, and he has the largest bankruptcy in U.S. real estate history in the late 1970s. He builds a complex that there really wasn't an audience for. As so much of the shopping moved out to the suburbs in Atlanta, he builds a huge shopping center in the middle of town that really fails. So Cousins gets in contact with some oil men from Alberta who offer him $20 million for his team. He paid $8 million for them 8 years earlier. The price was right, so they end up leaving. The Thrashers were a bit of an abomination from day one. You have ownership in place, a lot of kind of inherited money, people who don't really know what they're doing with hockey. Hockey also was so established in a lot of southeastern markets at this point, so the novelty was not there anymore. They're surrounded by Tampa and Carolina and Nashville and all these other teams. They really never got their footing in town, I would say. The team had a little bit less success than the Flames as well. I think they fell into a trap, a lot of the southern hockey teams too, that there's 10 or 12,000 absolute diehards, season ticket holders, but they didn't find any casual fans. They didn't have anybody who on a Tuesday night is going to tune in to the second period of a game and stick with it. And to build up broadcasting revenue and support, you need those kind of observers. And because the Atlanta Thrashers never seemed to get that kind of fan, that I think played a significant role in why they ended up not being a success in town. And when the price was right, ended up leaving. So I think I wonder to myself, is it merely anomalies with both cases, or is it something particular to Atlanta? I think at some point the NHL will try Atlanta again. It's just too lucrative a market to not give a shot, I think. I think they'd be wise to be very cautious if they ever did it again. But I think there's just too much you know, potential as a market in such a large market as Atlanta.
Or you could listen to true baseball and football fans and that say that the Atlanta has their priorities straight. Listen, I'm trying to get this connection, Clayton. I'm trying to nail you down. How did you why do you have an affinity for the Braves? Because they originally came from Boston, or
no? I don't. I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan. I mean, for the New England teams, except for the can't stand the Patriots. I'm a Jets fan because my mom loves Joe Namath.
Good reason.
In terms of this, book, it comes from a project I started in graduate school. I got interested in the economics of franchise relocations. And initially I wanted to write a book about basically the continent wide, the whole story of how franchise relocations happened. Mm-hmm. My advisor said, that's going to take you 50 years. Pick a particular city that's emblematic of the changes you want to discuss. And Atlanta is the city that in essence invents the model that so many cities use. The city leaders rolling out the red carpet, making these offers of public financing. You look at what Tampa or Phoenix or Houston or San Diego ended up doing. It's explicitly modeled after what Atlanta did in the 60s. Clearly, there'd been franchise relocations before, but there'd never been a city that went from having no teams, having teams in all four of the major leagues as quickly as Atlanta did during the 1960s. A lot of the shortcomings of cities you see, one also sees in Atlanta, too. There were so many teams so fast, it was very difficult to digest. Atlanta was a very spread-out place, a highly suburban city, a city with a lot of transplants. A lot of the other cities in the Sun Belt, you know, whether it was San Diego or Houston or Tampa, had very similar situations. And the struggles they faced were very similar to what Atlanta had just a few years before these other cities faced it, too.
Wow. But, you know... And not only that, and when you look at it, Clayton, can we see the Falcons and the Hawks winning something anytime soon? Or do we need to bring back Steve Barkowski and Lou Hudson?
I'm all for bringing both of them back, but I think I think it's quite possible, and in part because they just have better ownership situations than they both did for much of their history. The Hawks have had like five or six ownership groups in their history in Atlanta. It seems fairly stable now. The Falcons, once they get the Arthur Blank organization in, it's a much better situation than Rankin Smith's family, who the players I spoke with all spoke highly of them as being very friendly and easy to deal with, but it was very much a mom-and-pop operation. He was an insurance salesman who largely relied on guys who worked in insurance with him to play major roles in the football organization. And football is just too particular and specific a business for that to work. Blank has a professional organization in place, whether they win all the time or not. They're at least competitive in terms of the way they're being run with the other teams in the league.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack along with our special guest, Clayton Schroeder. And yes, we are easy to get along with, Clayton. We are friendly, too. And if you're just tuning in, you could find us on WWDB AM Talk 860 or live on Facebook on the Liberty Bell Smack page or right there on WWDB AM Talk 860's page as well. And Sal, I know that when we come in here, we have all the guests at one point talking, and we might get a little risky here and say that if we could do any sports betting, we might need some smacking things up. I keep saying that tonight. I think it's in me. How do I fix it if I do your car?
Well, JT Auto Body, that's located in Fulcroft, that's 416 Primus Avenue, will make you think that your car never had any dents. Owner Joey Trainer has assembled a championship team of certified technicians that will have your car back to you operating safely with that showroom look. Call them at 610-534-1643. JT Auto Body. Tell them Sal sent you.
I love that. Sal, you could send everybody. I'm sure JT would be very happy, and including our very next guest coming up here. And our guest is a public address announcer, voiceover artist, event MC, and freelance play-by-play announcer based in the greater Minneapolis-St. Paul area. He is a Washington, D.C. native with a Bachelor of Arts degree in broadcast journalism from the University of Maryland, College Park, and has an extensive sports background and was certified by the National Association of Sports Public Address Announcer in 2014. From February 2013 through June 2014, he was the ring announcer for Tony Jeter Promotions, introducing fight participants, providing fight results, and general announcements. For the next 4.5 years, he was the public address announcer for the Women's Pro Football Alliance, three-time national champion DC Divas, introducing the players, in-game announcements, players' honors, sponsor reads, and acknowledgments. He was selected by the boys' coaches in Montgomery County, Maryland, to serve as the public address announcer for the 2013 Boys Basketball All-Star Game and the Boys 2013 and 2014 Lacrosse All-Star Games. He was the hockey voice of the 2015 World Police and Fire Games and the 2016 USA Hockey High School National Championships. He was the boxing announcer for several D.C.-based champions, including light middleweight champion Jarrett Swift Hurd. He was the public announcer at George Washington University for 4 years for all sports, volleyball, softball, men's and women's basketball and soccer, swimming and diving, and women's lacrosse. He had the distinct honor of being the public address announcer for the 2015 Atlantic 10 Conference Volleyball Championship Tournament and the 2016 Atlantic 10 Conference Softball Championship Tournament, including the tournament championship ceremonies. He has worked as play-by-play announcer, television host, color analyst, and radio host at 4 different organizations in the Washington, D.C. metro area. He was with Monumental Sports and Entertainment, focusing on high school and scholastic sports, primarily hockey. The NFHS Network, including track and field, basketball, softball, and baseball championships. Synthesis Multimedia Productions, including scholastic basketball, volleyball, and hockey events. And the host of a weekly high school sports highlight show, The Prep Zone, and on 36 Nation as a radio host. He began his duties with NBA's Minnesota Timberwolves at the team's invitation-only scrimmage and then made his public debut at the Timberwolves' home opener on October 20th, 2017. He became the team's public address announcer, beating out an extensive search that drew over 400 interested applicants and still holds that position today. He provided play-by-play for productions of Minnesota independent wrestling and high school sporting events in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area from 2019 to 2022 for Mediacom Communications as their play-by-play announcer. He also served as a principal play-by-play announcer for Minnesota independent wrestling. Currently, he is the Building B office manager at the Math and Science Academy in Woodbury, Minnesota. And as if that's not enough, he's an entrepreneur providing voiceovers and public address services for events with his words and your message, providing superior entertainment. And here's the kicker. Did you know he's one of the announcers on the video game titled NBA 2K2022? How cool is that? He's got hobbies. He likes his TV and his movies, and he's a cigar dabbler and has an affinity for weird trivia. He's come to Philly to our show in the rink as today's main event. Let's have a big Liberty Bell smack welcome to Sean Parker. Hey,
yeah,
Sean.
Brother. Marianne, wow. Can I get you to do all of my intros? I mean, that was extensive and phenomenal. Mark, if I go into the wrestling business, she's my manager.
Come on.
She's going to escort me to the ring.
You got DC on one side. I'm from Pittsburgh on the other side. They're probably beating the door down there at WWDB. I got to join forces. I'll become this next Seth Rollins. You can be the tribal chief. We'll take on Philadelphia ourselves.
There you go. That sounds like a plan.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have to just definitely get that into the works. But first of all, I want to talk about the voiceover and everything, because we close out the shows, and we haven't been able to close out the shows right when we try to get on the same sync. And Marianne will give you the clue at the end, towards the end. But with your voiceover work and everything, have you ever considered being on American Idol or The Voice?
Okay. You don't want to hear me sing, even though I have had to step into emergency national anthem singing twice in my career when the track has messed up and I have actually, people are standing up, they are ready to go and there's no music. And so I would sing, and I mean, we survived, but no, you don't want me.
Did you fill in for Roseanne Barr? But she butchered that song, I'll tell you.
You know, it always you know, I look at it when I tried out to be the ring announcer in XPW coming up from San Diego. I had the audition, and after that audition, I felt really good where it was going to go. It wasn't an arrogant way of looking at things. It was just a very self-confident thing. When you competed for the PA announcing job with the Minnesota Timberwolves in 2017, when you knew you got it, what was the first reaction you said to yourself or just said to your wife? Or, you know, it's amazing when you hit something and you just it just comes all together. It's never the goal. It's a journey, I always say. What was your thoughts in this?
You know, it's funny, and I have a quick little story about that, because I did fly up to Minnesota and went through the first round of auditions. My initial, the thing that I really wanted to do, I just wanted to go to Minnesota to test my skills against everybody else. I really, in my mind, didn't have the idea that I was going to win. I just wanted to go up and do the best that I possibly could. And I know that my best friend is listening and watching on Facebook Live. So he is actually part of this story, because when I got finished with that first round, I felt so good about what I did. I called him. He was on his anniversary cruise. He's in the middle of the ocean, but he told me to give him a call. And I called him, and I mean, I am screaming at the top of my lungs on the phone. I'm pounding the top of the roof of the car. I did it. I came up here. I did exactly what I said I was going to do. And this was just after the first round. I felt really good about it. When I went for my final round and I had my final interview with the team, I walked out of the offices, went back to my rental car. My then girlfriend, now my wife, was at the hotel. I called her and I said, "It's over." She said, "Your interview's over." I said, "Yeah." She's like, "How do you feel?" I said, "I think if anybody else gets this job, they're going to have to beat me for it." Like, I really felt good, like I had it. And about 2-3 weeks later, I got the call. You know, I've just been walking in that ever since. It's just been, you know, it's been a true blessing. But I really felt confident. I really felt like that was my job to lose. And that was confirmed by the man that hired me. He told me later on that, you know, when you walk out of Xcel Energy Center that first night, that was your job to lose. And I said, "Well, thanks for telling me now. If you had told me then, I probably would have lost my mind."
Oh, and I know we're up against it right now. We're coming right back with you. But real fast, when you got the job, the girlfriend then became the wife. Was it a 3-day weekend? Was it a party? Was it a sauna? What was the vacation like after that?
Oh my goodness. After that, it was a mad dash to actually get moved up here, because I was in Washington, D.C. I had 3.5 weeks to leave D.C., to pack up my life, get up here to Minneapolis to get ready for my first scrimmage. And it was crazy. It was so, there was no party. The party came afterwards. But in that immediate aftermath, it was just frantic packing and moving.
Wow. Well, just tuning in right here to Liberty Bell Smack. Right now, we are having that lip smacking, trash talking, good Philadelphia style kind of show tonight. And Sal, I know that I said we were hungry before, but I do want to win some money tonight if I possibly can. Where are we going?
Are you guys busy after the show? Because if not, on Thursday nights at 7 to 11, there's bingo at the new Delco Cup. It's the former Stanley Cup Inn, located at 209 Springfield, Baltimore Pike in Springfield. There's going to be food, drink specials, and plenty of fun. So if you're not doing anything, come on out, and we'll have a great time at the Delco Cup.
I bet you I could beat you at bingo when I get the free space. Just so you know. That's what I count on, is that free space. And I have to tell you, we have people watching on Facebook Live, as our guest had just said. And a special shout out to our number one fan out there, Mickey Delaney. He's here every week with us. And also to Donna Viedrich. She's saying hello to everybody. And we have a special shout out from Curtis Cross. He's saying, is that the Sean Parker?
Curtis Cross. That is the man that I screamed into his ear that first night, that after my first audition.
That's great. That's great.
I love that guy. He's great.
Hey, Sean, I wanted to ask you, using your phrase here, their words, your message, right? How did you feel about my voiceover commercials? I have thick skin, so you can be honest.
No, you know what? I heard no problems. No. I heard no problems at all. Nope, you are
very
good.
Diplomatic. Thank you so much.
No diplomacy involved here at all. You were good.
Hey, listen,
you're bringing in the big bucks.
I appreciate it. I was looking at this laundry list of things that you've done, and I stopped at the University of Maryland. You did their basketball games. Go Terps. I was curious. You were a student, right? Was this post grad?
Yes.
Was this post grad, or why you were still enrolled?
No, this was post grad.
Okay,
no, I did work with. At Maryland, mm-hmm. Did a couple of basketball games there, a couple of lacrosse games, but the bulk of the college work was at GW, which is not too far away in DC, and just really had a phenomenal time there. But yes, go Terps, Maryland, everything, and it's tough because I'm in the heart of Big Ten country. You know, I'm right up here, University of Minnesota,
yeah.
So. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a new member, right? What's it like 3-4
yes.
years now? Yeah.
Something like that.
You call all sports. I'm just curious. Do you have a favorite?
You know, of course it's easy to say that basketball would be the favorite because mm-hmm. I'm here in the NBA. I really fell in love with volleyball when I was in when I was doing college, mm-hmm. Because it was a sport that I did not know, I was not familiar with. Like I literally, in the week before I got the job, I was watching volleyball matches on YouTube, just trying to really get the flow of what was going on. But it really was my favorite sport because of the action, because of the positive energy that the players had. On the court, even after losing a point, even after losing a set, the young women that are on the court, they get together, they huddle up, they're giving each other just positive energy and positive reinforcement. And that was something that was really refreshing to see. So it was just, I just had an awesome time calling volleyball.
And when you when you gravitated to the Timberwolves, that was a gigantic jump because you had been doing mostly college and high school sports. I'm just curious, these things you do now, aside from Minnesota, is this like a return to roots for you? Or what was your motivation to continue doing lesser sports, if you will?
You know what? Because I have a love of sports, mm-hmm. Lesser sports, I get the phrasing on that, but I just see it as people that have dedicated themselves to a craft that they absolutely love and they need support,
yeah.
Whether it's fans in the stands, whether it is broadcasters in the booth. One thing that I'm very proud of, as Marianne was calling out the list of things that I've done, public address announcer for the DC Divas, the Women's Football Alliance. There are so many people in this world that don't even know that women's professional football exists, the full contact.
Right.
A lot of people know about it's now the Legends Football League, the lingerie football,
right.
But full contact football, there are two major leagues in the United States, the WFA being one of them. And I, have had the privilege of being involved with two of the longest running franchises in history, the DC Divas and the Minnesota Vixen. Both of them have been around for over 20 years. Mm. And they are so grateful for the support that they get. They are so grateful to hear, you know, to hear my voice over the PA for the Divas and then for the Vixen doing their television play-by-play. And it's just so fun. I think, you know, with the NBA, with pro sports, you know, there's a lot of corporate money around and you know, and that's wonderful. I mean, it's absolutely great, big, shiny, lots of things. But there's something about the grassroots sports when you're there and it's a different feel.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's something that I think I always want to have a part of.
And that's what I was alluding to when I said lesser sports. It wasn't a derogatory phrase. It's just that they have the less exposure. And, you know, exposure is the lifeblood of anything that you're trying to get out there, you know. So that's what I meant by that. But switching. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
You know what? I wanted to include Clayton here because he's chomping at the bit. He wants to tell you, Sean, about the Atlanta-Minnesota World Series. Do not shoot the messenger.
What a great series that was. That was a great series.
Come in and, you know, we'll get this thing really going. But Clayton, he's bugging me. He says, I got to get that in, Mancini.
I can still see Dan Gladden on his head at the plate. Remember the play at the plate? It looks like he's doing a handstand. It was caught in time. It was great.
Was there ever a better game 7 than that?
Oh, my God. Oh, shutout, dual shutout for 9 innings anyway.
And by the way, earlier, you know, we were talking about the three cities and with everything. Yeah. I just wanted to throw in another three in there that just remember the Washington, formerly the Redskins,
Boston.
Now the Commanders.
Yeah.
Boston.
They are the only team that has had three different quarterbacks win the Super Bowl
right.
with one head coach and
right.
Joe Gibbs. So
right.
I just wanted to throw that
right.
in there.
Yeah,
you know.
Good stat. And yeah. Mark said you weren't a stat guy. See? I knew I knew it was fake. I know.
Doug, I think it was Doug Williams.
Yep.
It was Joe Theismann.
That is correct.
And the third one.
The lesser guy, yeah. The nobody. and Baltimore did the similar thing with their quarterback after. Not Joe Flacco, the other guy.
The third one was Mark Rippon.
Yes.
Mark
yes.
Rippon.
Yes.
And
that's
you
right.
know what's funny? You know what's funny about this, Sean, Clayton, and Sal, along with Mary Ann? You know, being a Pittsburgh guy, the Redskins were always my favorite NFC team. So now I got to get used to this Commanders thing.
Yeah.
But Philly's going to hate me from your side of the thing.
Oh, and I'm glad you said that because, and this is full disclosure on my football fandom. the first two teams that I ever rooted for, and I had the little sweatshirts for them. The first two teams I ever rooted for in my life were the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Good choice.
And I was thinking back on that because, of course, I became a Redskins fan, now Washington Football Team Commanders. And I was trying to figure out why I started rooting for the Eagles and the Steelers. Well, I started watching football around 1981. And back then, Eagles and Steelers, who was their primary rival, the team that they hated?
Cowboys.
The Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have hated the Dallas Cowboys for all of my life. And I figured out that was the connection. That was the thread.
That's a great, great sense of motivation there. I mean, you got a whole city here. You got a whole city in Philly to feel the same way.
Dallas something. They got the one thing they got going for them is I hate the Cowboys too, but the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are pretty good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
There we go.
They're not from Dallas, though. You know, they're not from Dallas. Right?
I am going to let me slight. I want to slightly pivot.
Yes.
Still staying on that realm, and I have to give a shout out. I have to give a shout out to the Minnesota Timberwolves dancers. I have so much respect for people that can dance. Because I can't dance to save my life. So to stand in front of 19,000 people and perform
right.
Every game doing right. these highly choreographed moves, I just want to give a shout out to the Timberwolves dancers, to all the dancers in the league. But the Timberwolves dancers, they are a wonderful group of young women. They are talented. They are smart. They are just, you know, they are pursuing their dreams. And that we have a couple of Timberwolves, former Timberwolves dancers that are now pilots. So, I mean, it's just, the jump off there. So I just had to give them their props.
Before I open it up to all these guys, and I don't want to get you in trouble with the wife because I love you dearly, my friend. Like, you gotta bust out the Ray Charles shades when you're kind of looking over there and let them dance and then kind of get back to the game.
I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that for a couple of reasons.
Sal.
I don't have to do that for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I do have to watch the performance because I do the out cue for them. So I have to make sure that I'm on cue and my boss counts me down so that I can give them the out cue. And I'm old enough to be their fathers. So I'm more protective of them. So,
So they're good. I get it. But is it going to be enough to help Mr. Towns? Because I don't know if Carl and your other two guys, Russell and Edwards, I don't know if they're enough to get, over the hump. I mean, anything can happen in the playoffs. I get it. But, I mean, he's on fire. This guy's great. And especially what he just went through, you would think he would take time off or his game would suffer. But, I mean, he's lighting up. He had the game-winning shot against the Cavs. And then last night he had 39 points and nine boards when they beat Golden State. So he's lighting it up,
I
mean, man.
I'll tell you something. That team has such heart. They have such heart. There have been games this year where they've been down 12, 15, 18. And if you're not familiar with the Minnesota landscape, the Minnesota landscape for the fans is like other cities. They are so angst-ridden. Because they've gotten close in so many times in different sports, and they've seen what they say is, you know, the same song over and over again. And the Timberwolves historically has not had the success that other franchises has. So when the Timberwolves go down 12, 14, 16,
you let the franchise go.
Here we go again aspect of it. Well, you don't get that feeling this year. This year you get that feeling like, okay, we're down. But we can do this. We can come back. And these guys have just, they have come through in the clutch. And again, you just see the heart, the grit, the determination. You mentioned Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell. Patrick Beverly has been such a spark plug and such a force this year. In the locker room, on the court, the fans have absolutely fallen in love with him. And all of those guys, it's a team that you can see is coming together, that's on the rise, and you're only going to see good things out of them in the next few years.
You know, I know we're up against it, Sean, and boy, we could go hours with you and Clayton and the gang, but tell us what one guy meant in that city for the Timberwolves, and I really love this guy. I had a chance to interview him. God rest his soul, Flip Saunders.
You know, there is a reverence that you can feel when anyone mentions his name. I didn't have the honor of meeting him. I got here after he passed away, but his presence is felt. You have that banner that is up there in the rafters that has his name, and you just, it harkens people back to the good old days of the Timberwolves, and it just makes you really miss him and appreciate what he did for the franchise, for the city.
Yeah. Okay, Clayton, you got a question?
Hello. Do I have a question for Sean? Or?
Yeah.
No. Well, I lived in Minnesota for a couple of years. Actually, I went to a lot of Timberwolves games when I was there. It was kind of in the lean years, but I had a great time when I lived out there and enjoyed their sports fandom, and also really got a sense of what Sean's describing with the angst-ridden nature of being a Minnesota sports fan.
Well, it all started because they let the first franchise get away. You should have kept the Lakers. I mean, come on. and of course, Minnesota losing four Super Bowls and all. They were a great team, too, Purple People Eater.
But the Twins
have picked that city up, though. The Twins have, yeah. Twins have done their job.
Yeah, the Twins, Minnesota United. Yeah. I mean, the sports landscape, the Wild. You know, people yeah. are really excited. They are really passionate sports fans here. They really want a winner. You can tell that every time you go, when you go to the U of M, the Minnesota Vixen, women's pro football, yeah. Everywhere. You know, there is just a thirst, a passion for success on and off the field and off the court. And, you know, it's a palpable feeling, and I just love it.
Real quick, the WNBA, the Liberty, was fined $500K because they chartered a flight during the regular season. That's a ridiculous rule. All the other players are coming out against it. People from other sports are coming out against it. What are your thoughts? I mean, come on, you want to be a major league franchise? What the hell?
I'm going to be political here, mm-hmm. and because I work for the NBA franchise, mm-hmm. Which is connected with the Lynx. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I will just say that, you know, we just have to be equal. The WNBA needs the support. Again, like I said, for women's sports, they are talented. They are dedicated to their craft, and you know they should be able to travel in the style in which their talent.
Well, I get the rule, equity and all, but the rule's got to be changed. It just does. You know? So,
guys, I cannot believe I'm going to say this, but this hour has gone by so fast.
Come on, another hour. Let's do another hour.
I would love to, because we have great guests with Clayton Schroeder and Sean Parker. But I have a question for you, Clayton. If people want to get in touch with you or to purchase your books, how can they do that?
My name is Clayton Schroeder. My book is called Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other places. But if you go to the University of Nebraska Press website, the publisher, and you use the promo code 6AF21, you can save 40% off the cover price. And you don't have to be an Atlanta sports fan to be interested. This is an origin story for the modern sports business as a whole. If you want to understand how the stadium politics have gotten as they have, Pro Sports, this is your book.
Well, that again, that promo code was 6AF21. I have to say that again so people could get your book. And Sean, if people wanted to get in touch with you, your little entrepreneur that you are over there, how do they do that?
You can find me. I'm Sean Parker, the public address announcer for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And you can find me on social media by the handle Main Event Voice, all one word, Main Event Voice on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, Sean Parker or Sean William Parker. Just want to leave y'all with one little thing. When I do my intro for the Timberwolves, I have a special intro, custom intro for Liberty Bell Smack.
All right.
Wow.
All right.
So you ready?
Yeah.
Philadelphia, it's time to hear me howl on Liberty Bell Smack.
Wow. That was great. Love it. That was great.
It's like Bird Lady down there in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, Heidi, who? She would do it.
John, do me a favor. You can remind Sal that Clayton's going to write a book on the Philadelphia Flyers to see if they can get back to the Broad Street bully game.
Well, it'll have to be like a Frank. Remember Frank Fitzpatrick from the Inquirer?
Here comes the kicker. Do me a favor. Beat the hell out of those Sixers when you come with the Timberwolves.
Yeah. But the Flyers, man, if you wrote a book about their ineptitude, it would be a lot like Frank Fitzpatrick wrote a book, old Inquirer guy from Philly. When the Phillies were the first team to lose 10,000 games, he wrote a book. And you know the expression, hey, you can't win them all? Well, he wrote a book entitled, You Can't Lose Them All.
Well, that's right. You can't lose
Great
them
book.
All. Now, guys, we love to sign off the show with our little Liberty Bell chant. Can you just hang out for a minute? Because we'd love you guys to join in.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to Liberty Bell Smack with our great guests, Clayton Schroeder and Sean Parker, right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. We had that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style, the way that we do every single week. And, you know, Sal and Mark, next week we have some great guests. We have Sirius XM host, analyst, and director of baseball content, Mr. Lou Landers, and WEI Network talk show host of Sports Exchange, Scott Morgenroth. So I think that would be a great show, too.
Well, they keep getting better. God put some good people in our path, and this is what's happening. We're blowing it up. I've become a Timberwolves fan. You know, I got my buddy Sean there. I don't know about the Boston base, but I will definitely look at the Atlanta base with everything down there, Clayton.
Sounds good. That's great.
It's great to have you on. Wonderful to meet both of you.
It really has been, and I think that we had the main event for Sean in a different way, and then we also had part of your game five, because there's five of us here on the screen. We're not animals, though, although we might be.
Before we get to this smack real fast, we got our woman manager, Sean, our tag team, sensational Sherry, Marianne Costello.
Aww,
all right.
Yeah,
I like that.
And
are we the mega powers? I guess we are.
Yeah.
And I am Marianne Costello, your host, along with Mr. Mark Mancini and Sal Tark Tagli. You can find us every Thursday right here on WWDB AM Talk 860 at 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, guys, we like to sign it off with our chant. And the way we do that is we count down from 5 to 1, and then all of us all together are going to say Liberty Bell Smack. Can you do that with us?
Yeah.
Are you ready for the
Absolutely.
Countdown? Here we go, guys. You got to count it down with us.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Liberty Bell Smack.
That's what I'm talking about.